This Janet Mefford Today podcast is sponsored by Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare is a nonprofit healthcare sharing ministry that allows you to control and manage your own healthcare and choose any doctor or hospital in the nation. If you're a freedom-loving American looking for contract-free healthcare, call now 855-585-4237 or go to libertyhealthshare.org.
This is Janet Mefford Today.
Our confidence is in Christ alone.
Are we going to stand with God? Come what may.
If the Word of God says it, I believe it.
And that's the way it is.
And now, here is Janet Mefford.
Hey, everybody. Great to be with you again. Well, are you really surprised that anybody would come after Jack Phillips again? I was going back to the time when the Supreme Court had handed down its decision in June, vindicating Jack Phillips, the Colorado baker who had refused to bake a so-called same-sex wedding cake for two men and prevailed at the Supreme Court on very narrow grounds. You'll recall that it was very narrow in terms of the decision. It did not come down and say all Christians have a right to their religious convictions on homosexuality. Not that I wouldn't have enjoyed that, but that's not what happened. What they had said at the time was that the Colorado Civil Rights Commission, which had told Jack Phillips that he had to bake the cake, actually had not done the same thing when it came to other requests involving Christian messages put on cakes. There were some other bakeries, you might recall, that had been asked to put Bible verses on cakes, and the Civil Rights Commission of Colorado said that was fine. But when it came to Jack Phillips, if it involves two homosexuals, you better bake the cake. And the Supreme Court found all kinds of religious animus on the part of the commissioners, and quotes were found of commissioners who were saying nasty things about Christians. And the court rightly concluded this was not fairly applied. So Jack Phillips won at the Supreme Court. Now, this is what's very, very interesting. What has just happened is a federal lawsuit has been filed now by Jack Phillips and Alliance Defending Freedom against this commission. Now, here's what's going on. The commission revealed that Jack Phillips is now in violation of its law over discrimination because somebody came in and wanted a gender transition cake and was told, no, I can't do that. That's in violation of my religious beliefs. And now they're saying that this is discriminatory. But it gets even more interesting. Jim Campbell, the attorney with Alliance Defending Freedom, spoke to CBN yesterday and dropped this bombshell. Listen to cut eight.
The request came on the exact day that the Supreme Court announced it was going to hear the previous case. And then a complaint was filed soon thereafter. And then the Colorado Commission sat on it for over a year until less than approximately 3 weeks after the Supreme Court issued its decision in Jack's case, in which it found that this very same state commission and these very same state officials were hostile to his faith. They decided to double down on that and to come after him again by pursuing him in this other complaint regarding this request that Jack described for the cake celebrating a gender transition.
Okay, let me unpack this a little bit, because initially when I heard about this lawsuit, I was thinking to myself, well, we all wondered at the time that the Supreme Court decision came down if somebody, because of the narrow scope of the decision, might come back into Jack's Masterpiece Cake Shop and request a different cake and try to start the whole process all over again and try to nail Jack Phillips to the wall. So when I first heard about this new case, I thought that's what was happening. But in fact, what Jim just outlined there is the fact that this complainant contacted Jack Phillips on the day the Supreme Court said it would hear his case. Now, does that sound like a setup to you? It sounds a little bit like a setup to me. Then a complaint was filed. Then the Colorado Civil Rights Commission, which has already been found to have displayed religious animus toward Jack Phillips in the final decision from the Supreme Court, sat on the complaint until after the Supreme Court handed down the decision favoring Jack Phillips, and then brought it out again 3 weeks after the decision was announced and nailed Jack Phillips to the wall again. These people never learn, do they? I think, in fact, that's going to be a really strong argument in favor of Jack Phillips going forward in this federal lawsuit. Now, Jack Phillips was asked if he was surprised by this. This is what he had to say. This is Cut 7.
Yeah, it was surprising. It all started the day that the United States Supreme Court announced that it was taking our case back in June of 2017. The very day, an attorney here in Colorado called me up and asked if we could create a cake to celebrate sexual gender transition and pink and blue cake. It's a cake that we couldn't create the cake because of its message, but we tried to make it clear that we would sell this individual anything else in our shop or other custom work, but we couldn't create that one because of my vape.
Incredible. Absolutely incredible, although not completely surprising because we know how hostile this commission already is toward Christians. It's just nail the Christian to the wall time. It's animus. It's hostility. It is misapplication of the law. Whoever heard of a transition cake? Now, if you read the complainant's original filing, it had to do with the fact that this complainant said she was requesting a birthday cake. This is a man, by the way, who had a transition to being a woman, which is impossible, but we'll just say she was requesting a birthday cake. And then they talked about the size of the cake and the flavor of the cake. And then the complainant responded she would need the cake by July 6th and wanted the cake to have a blue exterior and a pink interior. And then explained that the design was a reflection of the fact that she transitioned from male to female and that she had come out as transgender on her birthday. Now, think about this for a moment. If you are talking about wedding cakes, and this wasn't true in the first case because gay marriage wasn't even legal in Colorado at the time when the first incident took place with Jack Phillips and the two homosexuals. But at least with a wedding cake, you could say, well, it's discriminatory because straights can get married and so can gays now. And so you can't discriminate against somebody who can also be legally married. Well, actually, you can because it's a violation of your religious freedom to force you to say that two men can get married, which we all know they can't. I don't really care what the state says. But be that as it may, if you're going to make the argument that there could be discrimination, wouldn't you at least have to have an example where you were doing the same thing for someone else, but singling somebody else out to not do that, even though they were in other respects equal? Now, I'm not saying they were. But in the case of a gender transition cake, are you kidding me? There is no such thing. And this person could have just said, I want a birthday cake and I want it to be pink on the inside and I want it to be blue on the outside and leave it at that. There was no reason to say to Jack Phillips, other than to set him up, that you wanted it for a gender transition and to have done it on the day that the Supreme Court announced it would hear Jack Phillips' case clearly shows the whole thing was a setup. So it makes the whole thing all that much more interesting, but horrible at the same time for Jack. I just can't imagine what it's like to finally, after all of these years, get to the Supreme Court, win your case, be vindicated, go back to your store. People are all excited for you and flooding into your shop and giving you lots of business. Life is returning to normal. And then this happens. And I guess they knew it probably would happen all along because they knew that it was in the hopper. I just don't know how long the left can continue to harass Christians the way that it is. Enough is enough. And I'm really glad when people like Jack Phillips will stand up for themselves in court, because as I've said many, many times, when Jack Phillips stands up in court, he's standing up for you too, because it could be you. You never know whether you're a florist or a photographer or a baker or Kim Davis in a clerk's office. Who knows who the next victim will be? And so somebody has to go and fight for the rest of us. And I'm really, really glad they're doing this. Now, the new lawsuit explains, according to ADF, the Constitution stands as a bulwark against state officials who target people and seek to ruin their lives because of the government's anti-religious animus. For over 6 years now, Colorado has been on a crusade to crush plaintiff Jack Phillips because its officials despise what he believes and how he practices his faith. After Phillips defended himself all the way to the Supreme Court and won, he thought Colorado's hostility toward his faith was over. He was wrong. Colorado has renewed its war against him by embarking on another attempt to prosecute him in direct conflict with the Supreme Court's ruling to him in his favor. And this lawsuit is necessary to stop Colorado's continuing persecution of Phillips. And I believe that's absolutely right. So please continue to pray for him. Pray for the attorneys at Alliance Defending Freedom who are doing such good work on his behalf and really on behalf of all the rest of the Christians in this country who wouldn't do that either. Gender transition cake. Unbelievable. We're going to come back. A lot ahead. Stay with us on Janet Mefford Today. For the last few months, we've been telling you about the great ministry called Preborn. Preborn works with hundreds of pro-life pregnancy centers across America, providing free ultrasounds for women in crisis pregnancies. And 80% of the time, when that mom sees her little baby on an ultrasound, she'll choose life. But Preborn isn't just about saving unborn children. They also have a passion to see those babies' mothers come to faith in Jesus Christ. And they're seeing results every day. Through the work of Preborn, more than 48,000 babies have been saved, and 24,000 women have trusted in Christ as their Lord and Savior. But summertime can be a challenging season when it comes to support. That's why we here at Janet Mefford Today are committed to helping Preborn save 300 babies during the month of August. We need to raise $8,400 this month so we can keep providing those free ultrasounds to women who might otherwise abort their own children and who might otherwise never hear the gospel. If you can help Preborn during this critical time, please call 855-601-BABY. That's 855-601-2229. Now, a gift of $140 will help provide 5 free ultrasounds, but a gift of any size would be greatly appreciated. Please help us help Preborn this month and help save the life of a preborn child. 100% of your donation will go directly to the pregnancy centers. That number again is 855-601-BABY. 855-601-2229. Now, if you prefer to donate online, click the Preborn banner at janetmefford.com. We greatly appreciate your generosity at this critical time. Call now, 855-601-BABY. That's 855-601-2229. And please let them know you are a Janet Mefford Today listener. Or click the Preborn banner at janetmefford.com. Let's save some lives. Call now, 855-601-2229. Thank you. We're back on Janet Mefford Today. Unsurprisingly, credible allegations of domestic abuse by his ex-girlfriend weren't enough to derail the DNC's Keith Ellison from easily winning his primary for Minnesota Attorney General this week. Also a winner in the Democratic primary for Ellison's seat in Congress, Ilhan Omar, a Somali refugee who has been accused of marrying her brother to allow him to commit immigration fraud. She's virtually a shoe-in and will likely be joined by Michigan's Rashida Tlaib as the first Muslim woman in Congress. Tlaib, of course, is also a member of the Democratic Socialists of America. What are we to make of the Muslim candidate victories and the huge uptick in the number of Muslims seeking office, especially given the past and present histories of these candidates? We're going to get some thoughts on it now from Pamela Geller, founder, editor, and publisher of the Geller Report and president of the American Freedom Defense Initiative. She is the author of her latest book, Fatwa. Pamela, so great to have you here. How are you?
Hey, Janet. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, thank you. Let's talk first about Keith Ellison. The DNC came out, I think, about 72 hours after Karen Monahan's allegations were released and said they'd look into it. Do you have any confidence whatsoever that the DNC will suspend him or do anything to derail his bid for attorney general?
None whatsoever. Specifically because this is not the first allegation. This is the second now. Amy Alexander had, filed charges a number of years ago. We don't know how many other women have not come forward. But the alleged party of hashtag Me Too once again demonstrates that it is all hyperbole, it is all rhetoric and propaganda. When it comes right down to it, he's a candidate that won. Which, it to me shows where the state of Minnesota is, because Ellison has a very checkered past in terms of a great number of things. This is a And it bothers me when you say Keith Ellison. His name is Hakeem Muhammad, but this is part of what the media does. It's a deception. It's a dissembling. He was sent on Hajj to Mecca, paid for by the Muslim Brotherhood. He's viciously anti-Israel. He has called for Amazon to ban and stop selling any merchandise or books by the hard left smear machine, Southern Poverty Law Center's hate group designation. This is a man with a notorious past. But what you describe in the opening of this segment, these various elections, you know, if we talk about it, the media frames it as, oh, look, you know, the racist Islamophobes, you can't cotton, Muslims running. It's not a question of this wave of Muslim candidates running for congressional seats and gubernatorial seats as well. I mean, if Wafa Sultan was running, or Ayaan Hirsi Ali or Ibn Warraq, I'd be the first one at the voting booth. I'd be the first one at the polls. The candidates that we're seeing are aligned with Sharia Sarsour, Linda Sarsour, a virulent anti-Semite, pro-Sharia, pro-FGM, pro-Saudi Sharia activist, also aligned with the virulent Hitler-loving Louis Farrakhan. And these candidates, they make no bones about it. I mean, Omar said, may Allah awaken the people and help them see the evil doings of the Jewish state. You know, Abdul El-Sayed, who was running for Michigan governor, who thankfully was defeated, but he promised that he would continue on, also has a number of, you know, terror-tied affiliations. It's not a question of Muslim candidates running. It's a question of jihad-supporting anti-Semites running. And part of it is an uninformed electorate who doesn't want to do the work. And the other part, of course, is a media, an enemy media, who long abandoned its role as news, you know, news gatherers, news purveyors, and instead are promoting a radical agenda.
Well, that's right. When you look at Omar, for example, this was, I think, a few years ago when these rumors and some writings came out about, was she really in a marriage with her brother at one point, allowing him to commit immigration fraud? And that was kind of dismissed quickly. But what of that? That was a really weird story.
Well, it was a terrible story. And the immigration fraud was not speculation. She did commit immigration fraud. What is, again, telling is that the media does not mention it. The media does not cover it. This is deception. This is deliberate. Not just the fact of the polygamy. I mean, there are a number of criminalities to that particular case, not just the immigration fraud, but the polygamy and the support for the most brutal and extreme ideology on the face of the earth. But the idea that the media is blacking out the evidence on, for example, Omar's congressional candidacy, it's there. And, you'll see, like, what, 101 newspapers who publish editorials, for example, attacking President Trump. And that was just on August 16th alone. But Minnesota's largest newspapers, along with every other mainstream media organ, never mention the signed, notarized court documents and timestamp photos showing that Omar committed perjury. So, you know, this is when President Trump says the media is the enemy of the people. It's not, again, hyperbole. It's a fact.
Yeah, they don't even tell the truth. They leave stuff out conveniently. The other aspect of this, Pamela, that intrigues me, right after I heard about this son of Karen Monahan coming forward with his Facebook post, I immediately went to the CARE National feed on Twitter to see, oh, I wonder if they're saying anything. And they were awfully quiet over the weekend. To what extent do you think the media is too scared to talk about some of these things, in part because they don't want to run afoul of CARE?
Well, They have no problem. They're not afraid of calling the handful of us who speak the truth racist, Islamophobic, anti-Muslim bigots, even though Islam is not a race. We are called racists. I mean, if you say the Shahada, the Islamic prayer three times, you're a Muslim. Does that mean your race changes, Janet?
Exactly.
It's so absurd. It's lunacy. The media is Sharia compliant. The media, under the Sharia, under Islamic law, you cannot criticize or oppose Islam. You can't. It's considered slander, even if it's true. And the media has now, since 9/11, you know, voluntarily, there's no gun to their head. I mean, now, of course, here we are 17 years later, and we know that if you show a depiction of Muhammad in America, you will be targeted for assassination. I have been the target of a number of assassination plots, and instead of the media, freedom of the press, standing in support of the First Amendment, they enforce the Sharia. They blamed me. They blamed the writers of Charlie Hebdo. They blamed a YouTube video when our embassy and our ambassador in Benghazi was killed in cold blood. This is what the media is doing. Is it fear? I don't know what their motivation is. Whatever their motivation is, it's evil. I can tell you that right now, because they are throwing away our most precious freedoms with both hands, and they're not being passive. They're not passive. They're very, very active. They're very, very aggressive in advancing this hard left Islamic agenda.
That's so disturbing. And I know you have really been smeared, and you're so brave. It's just, you're amazing. But, you know, when you look at where this is going, as you mentioned, we're only 17 years removed from 9/11. And now we see this growing number of Muslims seeking office. As you mentioned, not all Muslims are the same, clearly. But where do you think this might be headed? What would be your concerns that you would tell Americans on why we need to be really, really targeted in terms of our looking into these candidates, seeing what their ties are, seeing what they stand for? Because as you said, in many regards, it's an uninformed electorate that says, I'm a racist if I don't vote for somebody like that.
Exactly. Because it's not a question of left versus right. It's a question of life and death. The idea that the media is misinforming the people is bad enough. But what's really frightening is how they're shutting us down across all social media platforms.
Yes.
Where there was a time when, because I have close to 2 million followers on one page alone, the Pamela Geller page on Facebook, that has been blocked. I am shadow banned on Twitter. Google AdSense has terminated my account. YouTube terminated my account, and there was such an uproar on Twitter that they restated it, but of course I've been demonetized. You can't share my links on Pinterest, but I'm certainly not the only one. This started for me right after Trump was elected, and we filed a lawsuit against the DOJ because you cannot. I know that Dennis Prager, I know people are filing lawsuits against YouTube, what they say, it's not going to work, because under Section 230 of the FEC code, they are granted immunity from these lawsuits. And when you sign up for Facebook and you sign up for Twitter, you are checking the terms of service box. And when you do that, you are agreeing to their terms of service. So they're not only misinforming people, but they're shutting down the very few organic ways we have to talk to our readers, our followers, and concerned Americans.
Yeah, we're really living in very disturbing times. Well, we're going to have to leave it there. Pamela Geller, check her out at GellerReport.com. Thanks so much, Pamela. This hour of Janet Mefford Today brought to you by Preborn. For your gift of $140, 5 women in crisis pregnancies can obtain free ultrasounds. Help them choose life. We're trying to reach 300 babies and save their lives by the end of August. We need you. 855-601-BABY, 855-601-2229, or there is a banner to click at JanetMefford.com. We'll be right back. This Janet Mefford Today podcast is sponsored by Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare is a nonprofit healthcare sharing ministry that allows you to control and manage your own healthcare and choose any doctor or hospital in the nation. If you're a freedom-loving American looking for contract-free healthcare, call now 855-585-4237 or go to libertyhealthshare.org. Speaking of the primaries, Christine Hellquist, formerly known as Dave, is the country's first major party transgender candidate who won the nomination for the governorship of Vermont. It seems, according to the Daily Caller, that this is also a person who doesn't like Christians very much and tweeted an insinuation that radicalized Christians are a problem that Americans currently tolerate. Back in 2017, in the month of June, Hellquist tweeted out, "And we worry about Sharia law," along with a link to an article from LGBTQ Nation about a girl disqualified from a soccer team because she looked like a boy, going on to say, "Radicalized Christians are a part of the American landscape and we tolerate it." Oh, sure. Like you tolerate Jack Phillips. Okay. Kim Davis. Shall we go on the long, 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 long list of people who have found themselves on the wrong side of big gay? At any rate, I was amazed to hear some of what this man says. Now, because I am of the same mind as Jack Phillips about telling the truth and making sure that we call things by the God-ordained reality in which we all live, I am not going to refer to Christine Hellquist as she. This is a man named Dave who has gender dysphoria. He doesn't look anything like a woman. Honestly, and I feel sorry for him. I truly do. I don't have any desire to pick on him or make fun of him or disrespect him, but we all have to live on a planet called reality, and I'm just not going to be moved off reality. But when you listen, for example, to his voice, how in the world can you ever believe that this man thinks he's a woman? I want to play a little bit of this ad that he put out prior to his election. Listen to cut one.
When I became CEO of Vermont Electric Co-op, the largest locally owned electric utility in the state, it was in trouble, and the state was ready to shut it down. But all of us citizen owners stood together, and we did more than just rebuild our company. We made it stronger and better than ever.
Doesn't sound much like a woman, does it? No, he sounds like a very nice, likable man, except he's not. He's appearing in this ad with this hair that doesn't even look, I don't know if it's his hair grown out and it's just doesn't look good or if he's wearing a wig. I'm not really sure what's going on, but it's just not working at all. Now, this part of the ad is where he mentions very briefly his transgenderism. This is cut two.
Vermont has always been a land of opportunity. This is where I made a life with my family, where I taught my children to ski, and where I now take my grandchildren fishing. We support each other in Vermont. That is one of the core beliefs in our state that makes us so strong. And when I came out as a transgender woman, Vermont welcomed me with open arms. I love Vermont. That's why I served on a local school board, engaged in my church, chaired the local mental health board, and served on the Regional Economic Development Corporation.
Now I'm running for governor to harness the collective strength of all Vermonters and to ensure everyone has the support they need to achieve their dreams.
Oh, it's so inspiring. Wait a second. Well, I came out as a transgender woman. Vermont welcomed me with open arms. And then I went on to serve on the school board and engage with my church. And I think said shared the mental health board, served on the mental health board. I don't know. That's what it seemed to have said. Now, let's go to the Channel 4 interview with Christine/Dave Hellquist. This was over in the UK. And contrast this with what he just said about Vermont welcoming him with open arms when he announced his transition to being a so-called woman. Listen to cut three.
My middle daughter, about a week after I transitioned, I had dinner with her, and she said, "How's your transition going?" I said, "Well, I think I'm experiencing transphobia." You know, I was in this meeting with these CEOs, and I said something in the morning, and they didn't hear me. It was kind of unusual. Said something later, they didn't hear me. In the afternoon, one of the other CEOs said something. The other one said, "Oh, yeah, Christine said that this morning." My daughter says, "That's not transphobia. Welcome to being a woman."
Oh, my word. First of all, you're not a woman. Nobody in that room mistakes you for a woman. Your voice is not a female voice. So maybe it's just that they didn't hear you. Is that at all possible? It's just unbelievable to me. He's a man who's trying to be a woman and is now complaining that he's encountering sexism and not being heard. Now, you think that was a little odd. Listen to this cut. This is four.
You know, the other thing that happened that first week was a stranger on the street told me to smile. Even worse yet, it said, smile, sweetie. I don't even know you. That never happened as a man. Mm-hmm. Never as a man did I have some stranger come up and say, smile. It happens all the time now.
Oh, that's horrible. That's got to be awful. People coming up to you and telling you to smile. What's sexist behavior? What? I mean, this is sexism. This is somehow an argument that it's horrible to be a female. In which case, why don't you just go back to being a man, which you are anyway? You know, like, I don't go around as some kind of feminist victim and complain all the time about the way I'm treated because I'm female. I actually think I have a wonderful life and I'm incredibly grateful to the Lord for the life that I have. I have relatively few problems compared to a lot of people. And I'm so grateful to live in a country where we have freedom and we are basically allowed to do almost everything we want to do as women. I have no room for complaining, no room whatsoever. But if I did have room for complaining, I don't have the ability to go back to the other sex because God made me this way. I'm a woman and I'm never going to be able to change that. Now, listen to what else the interview contained. This is cut five.
Do you feel in some ways that you've actually probably experienced sort of the everyday sexism which goes on?
Yes.
More so than transphobia?
Oh, yeah. Even in the most forward-thinking men, there's language in there that is the language of gender hierarchy.
Yeah.
And I will tell you that that experience really talks to me about what it's like to be in a marginalized community. Mm-hmm. Now, the transgender community, I think, is probably one of the most marginalized communities. And with that comes lack of self-confidence. You know, it's all those things that burden when you've been beaten down all these years. Mm-hmm. So, you know, a lot of people who are bigoted and biased will say, well, you know, I pulled myself up via bootstrap. Yeah, but you started out as a white man. you know, you can't say that. Because I also evaluate, what if I was an African-American male living in the inner city and transitioned? Would I be welcomed like I was in Vermont? Mm. Probably not. The majority of the people that are killed are trans women of color.
I don't even know where to start with that one. That was just an intersectionality soup. Everything you could possibly throw in as a victim narrative. Oh, I experience this everyday sexism and the language of gender hierarchy. What? This is the most deranged stuff I've ever heard. It was deranged what he just said there. Gender hierarchy. What? Because people said smile to you on the street? Because somebody didn't hear you in a meeting in your deep male voice? It had to be because you're now a woman? Which, by the way, you're not. I feel sorry for this man because clearly he needs help. He needs medical help. He needs some kind of assistance and intervention that is not helping him to, you know, if he doesn't get the help he needs, he's going to continue on in this. And I don't understand this at all. The other thing that I didn't like was the side slam against white males, which, by the way, he is. And white males saying, well, I brought myself up by my bootstraps. Well, you couldn't have if you were, you know, of course you could because you're a white male. Give me a break. You know, people have come here from all over the world, from every country around the world, and have worked hard and have achieved the American dream. And they did it by working hard and by not playing the victim. And I just think this whole thing is so insane. One more cut. This is cut six.
And I also will recognize, you know, when I talk about my experience as a woman, I've only been a woman 3 years. I haven't been a woman my whole life. I can't imagine, you know, my limited experience with being a woman has taught me a lot of lessons. But I can't claim that I was a woman my whole life. So again, it goes to what's the truth here? Truth is, I'm a transgender woman. I've been a woman legally for 3 years. Now, maybe mentally, you know, it's been my whole life. But I didn't get to live it that way. So I don't have those same experiences. I only have my experience. That's all I can talk to.
Well, again, it's the relativism. My truth, I've been a woman for 3 years. You can't be a woman for 3 years. You could be a female for 3 years if you're a three-year-old female toddler, but you can't be a woman for 3 years if you grew up as a boy and then became a man. This is so delusional, and I really fear for this country if in misplaced compassion we decide we will underscore this insanity. We simply cannot do that. And we'll see if Vermont continues to think this is a good idea to put this person as governor. I wouldn't be surprised. It is Vermont, after all. We'll keep an eye out. We'll be coming back on Janet Mefford Today after this. Are you among the millions of Americans who feel uncertain when it comes to their health care? As a Christian, are you looking for health care that doesn't violate your morals and convictions? We're happy to inform you that there is a solution, and that solution is Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare is a community of like-minded Christians who work together to pay for their medical costs. It allows you to decide how, when, and where you'll access health care, so you can make the best choice for you and your family. Starting at $199 per month for a single, up to $529 a month for a family. That's mom, dad, and all the kids. This is how healthcare should be. For more information, call 855-585-4237 or visit libertyhealthshare.org. That's libertyhealthshare.org. Regain control over your healthcare costs. Together, we're changing healthcare for good. That number again, 855-585-4237 or visit libertyhealthshare.org. This is Janet Mefford for Preborn. Nearly one in four pregnancies in America will end in abortion. The Ministry of Preborn provides free ultrasounds for abortion-minded women nationwide. When a mother sees her baby on an ultrasound and hears the baby's heartbeat, she's 80% more likely to choose life. Here's a story of a mom who went to one of Preborn's centers and met the baby she had planned to abort.
They took me to the back and they introduced me to my child for the first time through an ultrasound. I was able to see this life growing inside of me, hear the heartbeat, and nothing else mattered at that point. I was a mother to be.
Ultrasound is a game changer. Your gift of $140 will cover the cost of five ultrasounds. All donations are tax deductible. You can help save a baby's life by donating to Preborn. Just call 855-601-BABY. That's 855-601-2229. Or click the Preborn banner at janetmefford.com. Welcome back to Janet Mefford Today. Well, MSNBC is up in arms, so you know Trump did something right. As the New York Times describes it, in a remarkable attack on a political opponent, President Trump revoked the security clearance of John Brennan, the CIA director under President Obama, citing what he called Brennan's erratic behavior. I want you to listen to the announcement of the revocation of the security clearance of John Brennan from Sarah Sanders. Listen.
Historically, former heads of intelligence and law enforcement agencies have been allowed to retain access to classified information after their government service so that they can consult with their successors regarding matters about which they may have special insights and as a professional courtesy. Neither of these justifications supports Mr. Brennan's continued access to classified information. First, at this point in my administration, any benefits that senior officials might glean from consultations with Mr. Brennan are now outweighed by the risks posed by his erratic conduct and behavior. Second, that conduct and behavior has tested and far exceeded the limits of any professional courtesy that may have been due to him. Mr. Brennan has a history that calls into question his objectivity and credibility. In 2014, for example, he denied to Congress that CIA officials under his supervision had improperly accessed the computer files of congressional staffers.
Well, there's one of the reasons there at the end. But John Brennan, yes, he's been going nuts on Twitter. He himself has not exhibited professional courtesy toward President Trump. It is at the discretion of the president to be able to revoke security clearance if he decides he wants to do that. But the left, of course, is acting like this is absolutely unprecedented. Well, it's also unprecedented what John Brennan has done. Let's go back, for example, to July 6th. This was on the Judicial Watch website. When Judicial Watch announced it filed a Freedom of Information lawsuit against the CIA for records of communications with former Senator Harry Reid and his staff regarding the anti-Trump dossier funded by the Clinton campaign and the DNC. Senate Minority Leader Harry Reid reportedly believed then-Obama CIA Director Brennan was feeding him information about alleged links between the Trump campaign and the Russian government in order to make public accusations. According to Russian Roulette by Yahoo News chief investigative correspondent Michael Isikoff and David Korn, the Washington bureau chief of the left-wing Mother Jones magazine, Brennan contacted Reid on August 25th, 2016, to brief him on the state of Russia's interference in the presidential campaign. Brennan briefed other members of the so-called Gang of Eight, but Reid is the only one who took direct action. 2 days after the briefing, Reid wrote a letter to then-FBI Director James Comey, asserting that evidence of a direct connection between the Russian government and Donald Trump's presidential campaign continues to mount. Reid called on Comey to investigate the links thoroughly and in a timely fashion. Reid saw Brennan's outreach as a sign of urgency, Isikoff and Korn wrote in the book. Reid also had the impression that Brennan had an ulterior motive. He concluded the CIA chief believed the public needed to know about the Russian operation, including the information about the possible links to the Trump campaign. According to the book, Brennan told Reid that the intelligence community had determined that the Russian government was behind the hack and leak of Democratic emails and that Vladimir Putin was behind it. Brennan also told Reid that there was evidence that Russian operatives were attempting to tamper with election results. Now, on August 27, 2016, Reid wrote a letter to Comey accusing President Trump's campaign of colluding with the Russian government. This lawsuit filed by Judicial Watch was filed in the U.S. District Court for the District of Columbia after the CIA failed to respond to a February 12th request for the records of communication, emails and text messages between Brennan and or officials in the CIA director's office and Senator Harry Reid or his staff. They wouldn't hand over copies of any reports, memoranda, etc., materials, memos, audiovisual presentations, PowerPoints used by Brennan, etc. So Brennan has come under public scrutiny as one of the suspected prime movers of the Spygate scandal against then-candidate Trump and his team during 2015 and 2016 and later against President Trump and members of his administration. Brennan himself, and you heard Sarah Sanders mention this, has revealed his deep-seated animus toward President Trump and used his media platform as an MSNBC commentator to repeatedly attack the president. Now, I will also throw in here, this is the same guy who voted for the Communist Party. Do you remember that whole thing, that flap? This was back in September of 2016. And John Brennan revealed at the time that he had recalled being asked a standard question during his first polygraph test to enter the CIA. They asked him, "Have you ever worked with or for a group that was dedicated to overthrowing the U.S.?" Brennan said, "I froze." This was back in 1980, and I thought back to a previous election where I voted, and I voted for the Communist Party candidate. You know what? Call me old-fashioned, but if you're voting for communists, you shouldn't be the head of the CIA. I don't care if you did it once or 20 times. You have no business being in the CIA unless you voted for that communist by mistake and you completely regret it. But I'm not so sure that's the case. John Brennan should have his security clearance revoked, and I'm glad that President Trump did it. You know, and Ben Rhodes was on MSNBC, Obama's guy. Oh, this is horrible. This is unprecedented. This is just showing the scary times in which we're living because President Trump is acting like a dictator and all the usual garbage. You know, these are the same deep state folks who caused this whole thing to begin with. This witch hunt against President Trump where they haven't come up with anything substantive in how long now? And they just want him gone. They want him gone. It was supposed to go off without a hitch. They had all their people in place. They were going to get it all done. They have Mueller in place. Let's get it done. Okay, we're waiting. We're still waiting. It's ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. And I'm glad to see that they are going after some of these guys involved in this whole Trump collusion witch hunt stuff. I mean, these people are so corrupt. They're so corrupt. It's ridiculous. And if you want to have professional courtesy extended to you, it would seem that you would have some professional courtesy while you're out and about. That's not how these guys operate. They are so determined to take down Trump. They're so determined to make sure that they get back into power and progressivism advances the way that they planned, that they'll do anything necessary to smear him and to go after him and to try to take him down and get him impeached. And now they're looking toward the midterms and they desperately want it blue all across America, I don't think they're going to get it. But I'll tell you what, it will be very, very important for all of us who have been watching this unfold since the time that President Trump was elected and have been a little agape, I think, watching how violent it's getting, how scary it's getting. When you look at Antifa, what they're doing out on the streets and screaming obscenities and committing violent acts and going after cops and going after bystanders, and it's all supposed to be in the name of fighting fascism. Are you kidding me? That's not what it's about. These people are, I'm sure some within those crowds are paid by George Soros and they're disrupting. And, you know, it goes back to the Obama years. You got to have a resistance. You got to have an uprising. That's what community organizing was all about. It's about making sure that you can advance your cause at all costs. It's a sad, sad thing that America has taken a turn like this. But it's incumbent upon us, I think, to pray and to continue to understand how important it is that we show up at the polls and that we prevent these people from getting back into power. I'm not trying to say vote for X or vote for Y, but we can't let people who are determined to destroy our country back into power. And that's just the bottom line. This hour of Janet Mefford today, by the way, is brought to you by Preborn. And we have been so delighted at those of you who have been calling 855-601-BABY. That is 855-601-2229. We are excited about Preborn because Preborn is about saving human lives. And more than that, Preborn is about the gospel and getting the gospel into the lives of women who are in crisis pregnancies. You think about women who come through the doors of a crisis pregnancy center. They might be scared. They might be under pressure by their husbands or their boyfriends to get an abortion. They don't know what to do. They're not maybe so sure that they want to go through with the abortion, but they're really riding that fence and could go either way. And what happens when you donate to Preborn for your gift of $140, what you're allowing to happen is five women who come through the doors of a crisis pregnancy center will be offered a free ultrasound. And as we have said time and time again, for women who are offered free ultrasounds and take them, 80% of them choose life. And thousands of babies are being saved this way. Your money is really going to an awesome cause, and that is to save lives. But beyond that, Preborn is about getting the gospel to these moms, and thousands of these mothers have given their lives to Jesus Christ, which means that not only has that baby been allowed to live, but now the gospel will come down to that baby. And now that baby has a Christian mother, not just a mother, but a Christian mother. So if you can help, 855-601-BABY. We're trying to raise enough to save 300 babies by the end of August. We really could use your help right now. 855-601-BABY, 855-601-2229. Or there is a banner to click at janetmefford.com. Thank you so much for your generosity. God bless you. We'll see you next time.